Don't be alarmed. The quasi-shimmering light before you is a trans-dimensional gateway to other worlds, other voices, other thoughts, and other realities. Up feels like down, and down feels like the number 7 on a Wednesday morning. Don't worry. That quivering, blood-boiling sensation under your eyebrows is all a part of the charm. Welcome to the PCC Multiverse.
And we're back with another episode of the PCC Multiverse. This is Gerald Glassford, coming right back at you here from Pop Culture Cosmos, where we cover the latest news and trends in pop culture each week, twice a week, wherever you get your podcasts and on radio stations worldwide. Also, as well, Inside Sports Fantasy Football. We just dropped a great episode with me and Chris Sardieri talking, of course, the latest news in free agency and how it affects your fantasy football team. So go ahead and check it out today. ISFF, Inside Sports Fantasy Football, and of course, the Lakers Fast Break. We do 5, 6, sometimes 7 shows a week on that channel. So go ahead and check it out today, wherever you get your podcasts. But it wouldn't be a PCC Multiverse without my good friend. She is the evil mastermind of everything in the Ross household. Psst, don't tell Rob. But it is a good friend indeed. She is the knowledgeable one when it comes to everything in the world of RPGs. And we will discuss the major RPG of them all here in the 50th anniversary plans here in a little bit. It is, of course, the mistress behind Vampires of Vitae, Wild Beyond the Witchlight, and so much more. It is Melinda Barkhouse Ross. And Melinda, great to have you back, my friend, wreaking havoc on the pop culture world once again.
Well, I mean, that's what we wake up and aspire to every day, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, indeed, my friend. But great to have you back. What you been catching up on lately?
Oh my goodness. Like in terms of TV or just like in general?
Just general.
I realized in the shower this morning that I'm a year older than I thought I was. So I'm having a really great day. Okay. You know, it happens. You hit about 35 and then you start forgetting how old you are. It's a
Can
strange
Can I do
thing
that in reverse?
Yeah.
Can I just think I'm a year or two younger?
Yeah, right. So anyway, that was something I'm still processing in the background. We've been watching Shogun, which has been so good. We haven't watched this week's episode yet, where that's on our list of things to do for tonight, but it's been so good. And really, some of the best things, well, some of the things that I take away from the show are just some great like one-liners that I've been able to insert into my character's game at LARP. So it's been really fun talking about, you know, the nail that sticks, that sits too high gets the hammer first, and an ally with ambitions is no ally at all. You know, things like that. Yeah, it's been really fun to take, because there's so much political intrigue in the game. So it's so easy to apply it, particularly with Alex's game that he runs for LARP. So that's been really fun. We're all caught up with Delicious in Dungeons, which is super fun to watch if you haven't been watching that. It's a really great show. A love letter to RPGs is kind of how I see it.
Dante said he just saw Madam Web, and I was offering my deepest condolences to him on that, as far as having the 2 hours of his life taken from him by watching it. That's only if you're like the completionist on Marvel, everything right. Marvel, that's something that you have to do, but it's not something you want to do, I guess, when you go ahead and talk about how much of a disaster that is. Morbius, those kinds of things. So yeah, unfortunately, it has not fared well. It's already out on digital, but again, that's something that Sony needs to address as far as how it plays out. But we'll be talking about a possible third bomb in the Sony Marvel slate with Kraven the Hunter and how it relates to a certain 007 coming up later in the show. Plus also as well, we will be talking about what Melinda has been watching on Netflix, because a major property has been released on Netflix, and we'll go ahead and discuss that as well. But first, Melinda, it is the chance. Oh, I hear the phone ringing. Could you give a call to the Ghostbusters, my friend? Because Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is back in theaters. It has got mixed reviews, to say the least. And it is something that I think that a lot of people may or may not enjoy, depending on exactly, you know, whether or not you were, how far you into the Ghostbusters. And I know Josh and I are going to be covering the Ghostbusters IP on Monday's show, but I want to hear your thoughts on Ghostbusters Frozen Empires. The return again, because there was one other attempt to go ahead and bring back the Ghostbusters that didn't work out so well. But the latest return did well enough to spawn the sequel. But we'll see how far it goes with New York as a frozen empire.
Well, I mean, we kind of talked about it a little bit last week, and I'm just not sure how much is left there. I have, you know, watched some of the media that's been released around it, and it does look like it's going to be an okay story. And I don't think that a Ghostbusters fan is going to be disappointed in going to see it.
Okay. All right, let's hope so. But we'll see the kind of projection, and as far as the numbers are concerned, coming out the Monday show, we'll go ahead and try and lay that out for you here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. But yes, it is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, featuring the old crew, the original crew, along with Paul Rudd and the cast of others, including some Stranger Things nods with Finn Wolfhard and more. So go ahead, and if you're interested, check it out and let us know your thoughts on Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, popculturecosmos@yahoo.com or popculturecosmos wherever you get your social media. Just want to mention as well, coming up here in the not too distant future are some really interesting movies, including A24 bring out some very interesting stuff, including a very, it's not out yet, but it was already reviewed quite a bit. It is Civil War. I know that's something a lot of people are looking forward to. So that, I think, in the coming weeks, we'll be talking more and more about. It is expected to do well for an A24 movie because they are shown in limited release. So definitely looking forward to seeing what's there and what's coming up for that. But in the world of movies, a movie being brought back out to remind us all about how old we really are is coming up here in the not too distant future. Tim Burton returns to the magic in the world of cinema with directing Beetlejuice. And that's the first trailer came out. It didn't show you much, only gave you glimpses of what's going on with Jenna Ortega, you know, from her hit role in Wednesday, plus some of the original cast members. So your thoughts on a return to Beetlejuice.
Honestly, I was on the fence with it when I was hearing about it. And I mean, yeah, the cast is great. I love that Winona Ryder is back. You know, all of those things. I was like, yeah, okay, that's great. And then I did watch that that teaser trailer yesterday, and I'm so excited to go see this. The teaser anyway had all of the right member berries in it for you to pick and enjoy, you know, seeing the covered bridge and seeing them pull the plastic off of the giant miniature of the town and things like that. So I believe that they're going to do it right. I think they're going to treat the property with the respect that it deserves. And I think it's going to do maybe even better than anybody is even anticipating right now.
Okay, and I'm hoping so, because yeah, obviously the box office could certainly use it. I don't know if Ghostbusters and subsequent movies like, you know, the Planet of the Apes movie and other movies like Godzilla X Kong, how well those movies will substantiate the box office. So we could use some surprises like Beetlejuice. But you know, at any time that Hollywood draws back on this 70s, 80s, and 90s nostalgia, it's like mixed results. I would say mixed results, because they're taking virtually every popular or even semi-popular property from that era and redoing it in its own vision, and it's not always quite working out. So I'm hoping it does work out, because it is Tim Burton, because he originally made Beetlejuice, right, that he'll actually be able to have it translate to a modern audience.
Yeah, I think so. And I think too that, he's going to do and make the right decisions when it comes to, you know, paying homage to the story that he told before. And I think that it's a chance to really impress audiences and hopefully get some audiences who may not have seen the first Beetlejuice interested in going back and watching the original.
Absolutely. So yeah. We'll keep you updated on the status of Beetlejuice as it comes out later this year. But the first trailer dropped this week. And if you want to go ahead and check it out, please go ahead and click on the link on Facebook at Pop Culture Cosmos. It's right there for you. You can go ahead and click on it and share us your thoughts, Pop Culture Cosmos, wherever you get your social media. So, my friend, there is still much more to talk about. And before we hit the break, I wanted to go ahead and mention the new James Bond thing that dropped. That was the other major news story. It kind of dropped late in the evening, middle of the week, because most of the reports were started overseas on this. But as I was talking and we were talking to Dante earlier about the failed history of Sony's side Spider-Man movies outside of Venom in Morbius and Madame Web, the next movie to come out in the line of that is Kraven the Hunter. Although I think Venom 3 may have been pushed ahead of it, but I don't remember in our preview where it came along that line. I think Venom 3 may have been pushed ahead of Kraven the Hunter, but regardless, Kraven the Hunter, we've already seen a trailer for it. It has come out as far as the trailer is concerned so far, and I don't have any great opinions on it, and I don't think a lot of people do either, so I don't see it destined to do much better than Madame Web, or also as well what we saw from Morbius, which has already come out to broadcast television, or not broadcast, but cable television. So I will say this. Aaron Taylor Johnson, though, has been a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He has done a lot of good roles. The Train movie with Brad Pitt, he was very good and very entertaining on. But he is now expected to be the 007. Reportedly, they've made an offer to him to become the next 007. Your thoughts on Aaron Taylor Johnson becoming the next James Bond.
Yeah, so I mean, I know that the actors often have to play along, so if he has been approached, that might explain, you know, some of the things that I'm starting to see about him wanting to kind of distance himself from some of the rumors that he is going to be playing the next James Bond. It seems to me that Daniel Craig followed the same line before it was publicly announced that he had done it. They tend to not really address the rumors. They just kind of distance themselves from it. And I think that from what I'm seeing, that's what Aaron Taylor Johnson is starting to do.
Because he's going to be in The Fall Guy with Ryan Gosling. He's in The Bullet Train with Brad Pitt. You might know him as, in probably my favorite role of his, as Kick-Ass. Was my favorite role for him on that. But that was some time ago. But I don't know. Again, we didn't have any knowledge really of Daniel Craig. We'd only seen him in a scant amount of movies right beforehand. Was it The Lion, The Witch, and the Wardrobe? Or was it, no, Daniel Craig's, it was in one of those children's fantasy movies. Have to go ahead. I'll bring it out as far as it's concerned on Daniel Craig's list. Mm-hmm. But we didn't have very much. Oh, and also Tomb Raider before he came out in James
That's
Bond.
That's right. I forgot he was in Tomb Raider. That's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah, so I want to ask you, this is Aaron Taylor Johnson is more of a known property, but he's not a guy that has fronted with his name as far as being a star. It is if he becomes James Bond, if he signs, he agrees, and he's going to star as James Bond, it's going to still be selling the audience on James Bond. Your thoughts on if he can go ahead and be the next in line for a very good James Bond?
I think that he has the potential to be able to pull it off. I think that what we're seeing is the building of someone who can front a film. But as I think Daniel Craig has, you know, voiced his frustration over the years, once you become Bond,
Golden Compass is Daniel Craig.
That's what it was. Yeah.
Yes. Go ahead.
But I think that when you take on a role that is iconic like James Bond, and as we've heard Daniel Craig's frustrations over the years, you do kind of get a little typecast in that. So I think that that's why they look for and try to find these actors who are new enough in their careers, but established enough at the same time that people aren't going to be left going, who, when they make the announcement. So I think that it makes sense. I think that all of the signs are pointing to this probably being the case.
Okay. Well, the reason why I ask is because, again, James Bond in this universe, this movie universe that we have, is absolutely still a big name in this industry. It depends on which movie you talk to, but obviously Skyfall was an absolutely huge success, a billion plus movie. The other movies in the realm still can get you, even a bad James Bond film or a below average James Bond film can still garner $600 to $800 million easily.
Yeah.
So
I loved Casino Royale.
Yeah. I mean, he's been very solid, and he helped build again that, because once Pierce Brosnan left, there was a lot of questions with Daniel Craig getting that role, and he made it his own, and he did a great job with it and a sensational job with it. So I guess I'm still worried about where it's going. I know that my good friend, Mr. Joe Soro on the Lakers Fast Break, mentioned how he wanted Idris Elba. And I thought that would have been an excellent choice as well, but maybe his age came into play. I'm not sure.
I think we missed the window on Idris Elba. That would have been my choice for Bond. I think that we probably talked about that before.
Yeah.
But I do think that they waited too long on making any kind of movements with him. So I think that he's probably a little too old to be playing James Bond right now, which is unfortunate because I really do think that they missed a fantastic opportunity. And I think that he would have been huge, I think, as James Bond. So I
agree.
Missed opportunity.
I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. And that's something that, again, that maybe they'll regret, but we'll see. Aaron Taylor-Johnson, you might know as Quicksilver. You might know as Craven Hunter coming up. You might know him from several roles out there. Kick ass. He is going to kick ass as James Bond, getting the martinis shaken, not stirred, and all that good stuff. He is going to get, well, maybe, I don't know. I'm hoping they'll still keep the martini shaken and not stirred, but we'll see. We'll find out. As Aaron Taylor-Johnson reportedly has been offered the role of James Bond. We'll see what happens. But your thoughts on Aaron Taylor-Johnson being James Bond, let us know your thoughts, popculturecosmos@yahoo.com.
For the latest news and information, analysis and opinions on the Los Angeles Lakers and the NBA, check out the Lakers Fast Break podcast today on wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, my friend, there's still much more to talk about on today's show, the PC Multiverse. I want to ask you this. In the world of video games, not one, but two games are starting to come out. I just love how these AAA or AA or whatever you want to categorize these two games as, they come out just right on top of each other. You know, we've got MLB The Show. That had to actually come out because that ties into the baseball season. So that's something right there. But Sony, in their infinite wisdom, brings out Rise of the Ronin. Yeah, I mean, MLB The Show. Sony, concentrate on one thing.
Yeah.
You've already got MLB The Show. You think it's a different audience. You think it's these are video gamers.
Yeah.
And video gamers like to play video games regardless. And, okay. All right. You're going to do it. You're going to do it. But they, I think, committed a little bit of a faux pas bringing out Rise of the Ronin today, which is an exclusive to the PlayStation 5. On the same weekend as Dragon's Dogma 2 has come out by Capcom. Your thoughts on this in regards to, didn't need to happen like this. Sony needs to understand how to map these things out better because they had weeks in front of them. They could have released Rise of the Ronin out, or weeks after, which they could have done it. But yet they chose the same week they chose to release their other or big property that they have in MLB The Show. Your thoughts on Dragon's Dogma 2, Rise of the Ronin coming out in the same weekend?
Well, I mean, really, it it does have potential to apply to, you know, a different type of gamers. I personally don't play sports games, so I wouldn't be interested in that, but I would be interested in the other game, the Dragon's Dogma. But
they seem to care. Those two, at least, Raiders of the Ronin and Dragon's Dogma 2, might cannibalize each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's where things get a little bit dodgy. So what really this is telling me is it's a great weekend to be a gamer. And if you want to see your friends who are into video games this weekend, it's best to show up with energy drinks and, you know, some kind of snack and drop that off to your feral video game friends. They've got a big weekend ahead of them.
That they do, my friend, that they do. Yeah. But I want to go first on the, I think probably will be the most successful of the three games, which is Dragon's Dogma 2. And the reason why I say that, because the first was, I don't know if you'll categorize it as a cult hit, but it's been very fondly remembered. Mm-hmm. So in doing so, I think that it is probably going to get a lot of good love to start off with. It's getting solid reviews for the most part from what I'm seeing. I'm going to go ahead and bring up the Metacritic score right now on it, but it does seem to be getting some, you know, like Rise and Ronin, they're both getting fairly good reviews. You know, they're both right around 75, 76. So it does seem to be something that I think that a lot of people are interested in. Oh, actually, Dragon's Dogma 2 is getting much higher, 87. So it's getting a substantially better score than Rise of Ronin. But Dragon's Dogma 2, I think, really brings out the best of adventure video games. And one of the things I want to ask you is, though, with the thought of Dragon's Dogma 2, it is more of a, how should I say this? How it does have hack and slash elements, but it does have that wide open space to cover. Your thoughts on Dragon's Dogma 2, if you think that this could be a substantially greater hit than its original?
Well, I think that you're talking my language when you're talking about a hack and slash with a wide open world. I'm a button masher. Elden Ring, the controls are laid out very, very differently. I struggle with that game as much as I try. The Dogma game definitely sounds like it's going to be a little bit more up my alley. But man, I don't know. Rise of the Ronin looks like a great game as well. So if I had to make a choice this weekend, I think the Dragon's Dogma may come out a little bit ahead of that, just based on that description of being a bit more of a hack and slash, which is my jam.
Yes.
With some wide open world exploring, which is also very fun.
And the fact you can, you know, just recruit and get some NPCs to assist you on your journey, which is always something I liked. I liked Oblivion when I could go ahead and I could actually get someone or get a group of individuals to go ahead and be a part of my journey. And I thought that was really, for me, something I really enjoyed, that aspect of it. But your thoughts on being able to go ahead and interact in a way that maybe not all RPG games can go to, being able to take care of big monsters in a group. It is not supposed to be the easiest game in the world. It does not give you a learning curve. It does not, from what I've seen on a ton of these reviews and ton of the footage I've seen, does not hold your hand. And again, we're seeing this in the line of a lot of games out there that are coming out that don't hold your hand, that don't get you started, that don't ramp up the intensity, that don't ramp up the, I guess, experience level. It just hits you hard and hits you right away. Elden Ring, you just spoke of right there. That is a game that does not hold your hand. In fact, it smacks it and then uses the hand that you were trying to hold and hits you in the face with it several times. Before you finally get it and move on. So your thoughts on Dragon's Dogma 2 not providing a little bit of a ramp up to start, instead just throwing you into the wolves figuratively and literally in Dragon's Dogma 2?
I mean, there is a level of fun to that, but I'm one of those people who tend to get a little frustrated when I can't figure out what's going on. So There has to be some kind of
answer. Are you a controller thrower?
No, I'm not. I don't rage quit either. I get a little hot under the collar from time to time, but I do my best to stay with it.
Do you shout Canadian curse words?
Even those are far too polite. But no, I think that, you know, there is a level that of hand holding that I personally need as a person who plays video games, but that's because I don't consider myself to be like a truly like really hardcore video game consumer. I have my favorites and I have my games that I enjoy playing. But I don't necessarily need that extra challenge of going in and trying to figure it all out on my own. A little bit of help along the way is much appreciated.
Well, as we'll talk about with Baldur's Gate 3, mm-hmm. and of course, you know, your fascination with those type of games, the games that you played last year and are still playing didn't offer much of a handholding as well. So your thoughts on that? I mean, you seem to enjoy it.
Yeah, that's true. I think the difference with Baldur's Gate is I'm walking in understanding an awful lot about Dungeons and Dragons in general. And I understand that you can make the argument that Baldur's Gate might be a little more D&D adjacent or what have you. But I just think that because as a player, I'm walking in with, you know, that bit of D&D lore behind me, I understand what Magic Missile is. I understand what Featherfall is. I understand what Misty Step is. And, you know, having all of the things popping up on the screen that tell you, you know, X to do this, X to do that, you know, that all goes really very far with me. And especially in the beginning of playing games. Now, Robbie has managed at this point to get much further in Baldur's Gate than I have. I think I've just started to crack Act 2. That's
subscriber,
You know, cool. the time to really sink into it. But the enjoyment, I think, of Baldur's Gate is you start as your level one character and then, you know, by the time you hit level 3, I feel like if you've stayed with it, then you have a pretty good idea of basically how to run the characters and that kind of thing. But it does not give you hints. If you can't figure out a puzzle, baby, you are stuck. Now, that's for sure.
Speaking of Baldur's Gate 3, before we hit the break, I did want to go ahead and mention that Larian Studios, after initially thinking about doing some DLC, and maybe some expansion on top of it, or Baldur's Gate 4 has decided to, you know what? We're just going to wipe our hands and move on. It's like they're like running, starting with you know how you have a slow run and you're like trying to look back and you're trying to make sure nobody's following you. Like in this case, Wizards of the Coast. And we're like starting faster, and it gets faster, and it gets faster. And they're like sprinting away from Wizards of the Coast because they said they want no more to do with the world of D&D. They are moving on to their next project. Well, actually, they're going to have some time off, well-deserved time off, and then going to go ahead and basically work on something else. So your thoughts on that before we hit the break?
Yeah, I you know.
Bye-bye, D&D. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you know, as D&D gets ready to celebrate its 50th anniversary, it's incredibly disappointing to see headlines like that pop up, especially with everything.
We'll talk about that after the break.
Yeah, you know, with everything that we've come up against, you know, when it comes to D&D recently. So just seeing another company go, you know what, it's just easier if we don't. So we won't. It's disappointing.
It's disappointing, but it's not surprising because I'm sure the mechanics creating that or recreating that into a video game, it's not been done well before. You know, a lot of other video games, when they slap the D&D label, they just say instead of going through that route, they'll just make it a hack and slash, or they'll go and make it some other type of RPG genre like game. Or model it after an RPG game that's already out and existing and not Dungeons and Dragons, because when they do try to model it after Dungeons and Dragons, it never seems to go right until now with Baldur's Gate 3. But I think that just shows how much and how tired they are of the D&D inner workings, maybe dealing with Wizards of the Coast. I'm not sure, but they're just tired of it all and want to move on to something fresh. And I applaud them for that because they now have the cachet to do pretty much anything they want.
Absolutely.
Thanks for checking out the PCC.
you know, the pop culture cosmos. We'll be back in one moment.
What is Planet Cool Stuff? It's your ultimate destination for insightful exploration from the realm of pop culture. Delve into the world of movies, video games, toys, cartoons, and visit with one-of-a-kind creators, discover incredible places, and see historical artifacts. Whether it's a toy room tour or exploring the best of pop culture cinema, Planet Cool Stuff has got you covered. Planet Cool Stuff, exclusively on Jinx Esports TV Canada.
Speaking of getting things right now for your video games collection, MLB The Show 24, that came out to very positive reviews, so go ahead and check that out if you're a baseball fan. Dragon's Dogma 2 is still at a very strong 87 on Metacritic. That is available now. Rise of the Ronin, around 75. Go ahead and check that out as a PlayStation 5 exclusive. We didn't even mention the return, once again, of Alone in the Dark. That's a PS5 exclusive by THQ Nordic. That outfit, as far as the whole, you know, the company that owns them and several others, as far as, I think it's Endeavor, you know, the market, the firm that owns that bought up all of these companies, these mid-level to smaller video game companies, and they are just putting out anything that they can. And a return to Alone in the Dark, and to release it on a weekend like this was probably even dumber than Sony's move. So THQ Nordic, man, just think about when you release these games, because it's also important how well these games do is how they first initiate their release, aren't they, Melinda?
Yeah, it's pretty indicative of how a video game is going to go and how the sales will be moving forward.
Yeah. So the Embracer Group. Yeah, the Embracer Group, again, it is the company that owns several, mid-level tier or smaller tier publishers and developers, including THQ Nordic. They've had to their own financial issues after buying up all these entities and had to start selling some off. Some of them are buying their own independents. Yeah, it's getting a little bit messier there. But yes, they did release, along with the company THQ Nordic, Alone in the Dark, a revival once again. There's never been a good revival of Alone in the Dark. It should have just stayed Alone in the Dark quite some time back, you know, and just put it there, because every time they try to bring that back, it always goes, but we'll see what happens. It is Alone in the Dark, along with Dragon's Dogma 2, MLB The Show 24, and Rise of the Ronin. Those are the major releases, all out within the same week. Hindsight will be, I'm telling you right now, Melinda, hindsight will be 2020. It's a very cannibalistic industry. MLB has its own niche, but the rest of these games, they'll cannibalize each other. And one, I believe, will survive out of those three games that are left. So we'll see what happens. But let me know your thoughts. If you're getting any of the games that came out this weekend, and what else are you targeting? Are you playing it? Are you enjoying it? So let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. Well, speaking of the 50th anniversary of Dungeons & Dragons, my friend, it is Wizards of the Coast. You were to categorize Wizards of the Coast as with a character alignment, as far as neutral good, chaotic evil, something like that, just what would you categorize Wizards of the Coast as a company, especially coming off some of the controversies we talked about last year?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Let me see. I mean, my first instinct is to say chaotic evil, but I don't know how fair that is.
I don't think they're chaotic evil, but chaotic good, maybe?
Chaotic good. I mean, that's good for the good of all, and we've certainly see them act against that a little bit. Neutral evil, maybe. I don't know if that. Let me just have a quick look at the neutral evil. Typically selfish, has no qualms about turning allies of the moment, and usually makes allies primarily to further their own goals. I mean, if the definition fits.
There you go. They must wear it. So, Okay. All right. We've got a classification there. All right. Sounds good. But speaking of which, Wizards of the Coast recently announced plans for their 50th anniversary of Dungeons & Dragons. And first off, before it goes by in the month of May. I don't want to forget it, so please don't let me forget it as far as that anniversary, because we will celebrate it then. But it is Dungeons & Dragons 50th anniversary. They have announced quite a bit in detail. A lot of it centers around a lot of new adventures, republishing of books. I mean, this is a iconic series that has now generated. It's gone through ups and downs. But at 50 years old, it is at one of its higher points in its evolution of popularity. So your thoughts on Dungeons & Dragons as it nears its 50th anniversary?
I mean, it's still the biggest RPG in the world. Let's be honest. It's still, you know, attracting new players to it. It's still doing all of the things I think that the game needs to do in order to continue to grow. The D&D 1 stuff, I think, is turning out or proving to be a little bit more complicated than they first thought it was going to be. Which, you know,
what a surprise.
Yeah, I feel like everybody tried to tell them that it's not going to be that simple, but you know, here we are. I know that they do have a lot of really interesting books coming out this year, particularly if you enjoy Vecna. I believe there's a new game book coming out that's dedicated to him. And I think Beetle and Grimm has already started to build the campaign case for it. So, you know, that's all part of what they're up to. New content for D&D is always exciting. It doesn't matter if you're going to go from V5 into D&D 1 or if you're going to hold the line at 5e, or if you're still playing, you know, 3e or 3.5, or if you're still playing 4th edition, bless your heart. I think that there's always room for people to play D&D the way that they want to, and they get to do that because it's happening at a table, and ultimately you and the players are deciding, you know, what you are going to use. And with all the new stuff coming out, you can still cherry pick those things and add them into your game if you truly wanted to. So I think that it's good for them to be pushing out content. I mean, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, that we have gone through years of drought where there just wasn't a whole lot happening, you know, in terms of things being released by D&D. And perhaps I'm off base on that, but I just feel like that's happened. But again, I could be wrong. So I think it's a positive. They've managed to keep it going for 50 years. I can't see it slowing down anytime soon. It does seem to be a bit of a runaway train in terms of its modern success anyway.
There were some pretty slow times, though. I guess in the 90s and the 2000s, there were some pretty slow times for D&D. It was an afterthought. I think we should be all honest with ourselves as far as it's concerned. It was labeled to a niche, mm-hmm. niche participation and niche group. I mean, there was still being going on, but it was mostly guys and gals in my age group that were still playing it at that period of time. But a younger generation has picked up the interest on it, Melinda. And I think a lot of it has to do with Stranger Things. I think, let me ask you this, because you are much more in tune with the Dungeons & Dragons world than I am. I've had a loose affiliation with it over the course of my life. Coming back, that was one of the things I tried to get really into, as you know, during the pandemic. That's mm-hmm. how we met, because of what you know I wanted to go ahead and do. And big shout out to Roger. Hope you all is well with him. Always thinking of you, my friend, and cannot thank him enough for sending us on a course of adventure for many years and having me stuck. I mean, meet Melinda and Robbie. Just truly appreciate it. But I want to ask your thoughts on this. How monumental or how important was Stranger Things in introducing Dungeons and Dragons to a new and younger audience out there?
I would say that it was probably pretty significant. And I think, too, it probably brought people back to the game who hadn't been playing it for a while, who had, you know, decided to hang up the dice bag and hadn't had a table for a number of years. I think it brought those people back into the fold. I think it exposed a whole new audience to it. But you know, you can't forget Big Bang Theory had some pretty significant
critical role as well. Yeah, critical role. And the rise of streaming.
Yeah, absolutely. That's also big, large, massive components to the success. Community had their storyline where they were playing D&D. I think that the support of pulp culture at this point has really helped to boost D&D to heights that it hasn't seen since probably the 80s.
And I agree with you. I think it may have been a little bit higher coming in, going in the pandemic, mm-hmm. because people were home doing things that they were playing on, but still very strong. Even after the controversy last year, I think that kind of took some bloom off the rose. I know it did for you. That's for sure.
You were angry.
You were an angry woman.
Well, absolutely. I'm so tired of being part of fandoms that end up spitting in the faces of their fans. I am so tired of that. It's just, it's time for fans to be embraced by these IPs. And it happens for a little while, and then it just seems like everything does a 180, and then all of a sudden your fans become your greatest enemies. And I don't understand that thinking. I don't get it. Sorry. The Brinks truck? I don't know. Maybe. Yes.
It's always about money. When in the end, your answer, you can always find leads to the Brinks truck, and as it always does. But it is Dungeons & Dragons planning a 50th anniversary. We will go more in detail in the month of May. I'm going to let Melinda choose the day, you know, or the episode that we really go into, because I guess it's a month-long celebration. There's no one day. Is there one day that is supposed to happen? Is there like the May, you know, like Star Wars has its May the 4th day?
Yeah,
you know?
That piece of information is not currently in my brain, to be honest with you. So okay. I can certainly find that out, though.
If you can, please, I'd love to go ahead and do it on that day. If not, if it's just like a month-long celebration, I'm sure because Wizards of the Coast may want to do that out as far as a month-long celebration for monetary reasons, that may be in play as well. So yeah, let me know your thoughts on that. And I'd love to hear your thoughts as well on Dungeons & Dragons, the 50th anniversary as it gears up. Are you excited for it? Are you doing anything special for it? Please let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com.
If you're in the Las Vegas and Henderson areas and are looking to buy, sell, or trade the best in classic or current video games and pop culture collectibles, there's no better place to go than Retro City Games. From Xbox to PlayStation, Nintendo to Atari, the great crew at Retro City Games provides the best place to go for all your gaming options. Stop by their two awesome locations in Henderson and also the Las Vegas Strip, or follow Retro City Games on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest deals and new items. Without a doubt, there's no better place to go for your gaming needs than your friends at Retro City Games.
One of the things that came out over the course of the past week is the first teaser trailer for Star Wars Acolyte, which takes place in the High Republic era, which I believe about 40 to 50 years before the Phantom Menace, I think is what they're going to tie it down to, right around the, you know, the dawnings of Emperor Palpatine,
right.
You know, becoming, or the Sith Lord, how he decided to go ahead and check on out Darth Plagueis. You know, have you heard the story of Darth Plagueis the Wise? And I'm thinking to myself,
that's pretty good.
When he says that, Darth Plagueis the Wise, I'm thinking to myself, okay, what happened to Darth Plagueis? You killed him. You absolutely killed him. So how is he wise if you killed him? Okay. All right. We'll play your game. All right. But it takes place right around that point. We don't know if Darth Plagueis or Palpatine will be involved. But it does take place with some spurned Jedi becoming evil and wanting to become Sith Lords and all that, as far as Sith wannabes going out and trying to exterminate some Jedi. Your thoughts, if you got a chance to check out Star Wars Acolyte, and your level of excitement seeing how it's another part of the Star Wars universe, which may not always translate to just a casual audience that just wants to get somewhere centered and grounded going forward.
Sure. I think that a lot of the shows have on purpose been exposing us to different corners of the lore of Star Wars. And, you know,
Andor season two, I guess I can't say too much about it I can't say too much against what they're doing, because I love Andor and I'm waiting for Andor season two. And that takes place in another part of the Star Wars universe.
Right. Yeah. So I think that for the casual fan, which I consider myself to be of Star Wars, I saw this trailer and I mean, I'm intrigued by the story. I'm interested to watch how it plays out. And I have a few Star Wars buffs on my Facebook page, and I have a few who are, you know, more passively fans the way that I am. And for the first time in, well, a few shows, I'm seeing unanimous excitement for it, at least as far as what I'm hearing directly from people that I know. So I'm taking their word for it. It looks interesting to me. So I was already excited before I spoke to them, but I was like, so like, what do you think? Like, is this going to be a thing? And they were like, no, looks like it's going to be legit. So
do they like to see Jedi killings? I guess that just, I mean,
maybe
Disney knows that. Okay. We need a hit show in Star Wars. Let's go get rid of some Jedis. Let's go do that. Let's find that.
But I think that adds to the Jedi mystique though, of how dangerous it is to become a Jedi, and how just simply becoming one means that you are going to fight for your life more often than not.
And even though they're so peaceful in nature, mm-hmm. they're monumentally naive.
Yes. So,
yes. Yeah. That's the thing. To be a Jedi, you have all these powers, yet you really don't want to use them. And you got to be oblivious to what's going on around you at all times, especially if it's an evil plot that you finally catch on to later. And it's like, oh my gosh.
It's
like
just a low perception check. That's all it is.
Yeah, but it's like the prequels. I mean, one of the reasons why I was thinking about it, I hate the prequels so much. And I know one of our big fans, Cool Bro, on both all my channels, you know, he talks about, you know, his love for the prequels. By the way, Phantom Menace is coming out just beforehand in theaters, just to get you caught up as far as what came place right after the time of the Acolyte. But a part of it is just the fact that, you know, the Jedi are so monumentally naive. They're portrayed as being so monumentally naive. It's like, and then they catch on like maybe a half a movie or two movies later. And it's just like, I knew this all the time, man. What's going on? So,
yeah.
So at least Star Trek, you know, they catch on a little bit sooner. And I'll just leave it at that. But yeah, being a Jedi, you've got certain responsibilities and powers. Yeah, that you have. You've got a lot of good powers. You don't like to use them, and you're monumentally naive. Yes. So yeah. We'll just leave it at that. And let all those evil forces go ahead and plot right behind your back. But watch your back. Watch your back. But it is Star Wars Acolyte. We'd love to hear your thoughts. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. And I wanted to check out something that I'm going to check out this weekend, because I've been cramming a lot. I've been cramming Halo, which I will talk about with Josh. Do I have a lot to say on Halo Season 2. A lot there to say. Masters of the Air, I did cram all that in. I also talked to him about that. I don't know if you checked that out. That's Apple series. It's already been done with, but I had to catch up on that. I've been catching up on Shogun on FX. That's a highly must watch. I'll just give you a hint on
them. It's so good.
Yeah. Oh, you've been watching it?
Shogun? Yeah.
What episode are you up to?
I haven't watched this week's episode yet.
Okay. So I'm up to five. I finished so far what's done.
Okay.
You and I got to talk about it. You and I got to talk about it when it's over.
Obviously.
Yeah, you got to talk about it when it's over. Okay.
Yeah.
Netflix's Three Body Problem, which is a remake of a previous version of it. Not too long ago, but also a massive book series that came out. Your thoughts on Netflix's Three Body Problem? I think the anticipation on this one, and I know people were let down by Rebel Moon, which Rebel Moon Part 2 is coming out next month. I am going to watch it just to finish off, just a completionist set there. I know Avatar the Airbender has gotten people, I mean, it's not universally trashed like the last time it went around, but it's still not exactly beloved like One Piece. The One Piece, I think, series was a lot better than Avatar. Your thoughts on Netflix's Three Body Problem, because this could be the biggest hit for them so far this year, and it might not even be close because the anticipation is really, really high on this one, Melinda.
Yeah, it's a bad show to be a scientist in. That's for sure.
Yeah, they make up their own stuff here.
Wow.
Yes.
Thank God I'm kind of a dummy because, wow, being a smart person in that show is a death sentence, really.
You know what? You're used to, though, in Star Trek, they make up their own technology and stuff on that show. So if you're okay with that there, they do plenty of that here from what I hear.
Yeah, they do. And really, the way that I don't know, I felt that it was acceptable. I enjoyed what I've seen of it so far. I think we're 3 episodes in, maybe 4. There's some interesting conundrum, I think is the word that I want to use. There's definitely some interesting character choices, and I'm excited to see, you know, how those choices are going to play out in terms of who has decided to put on the helmet and who hasn't, and things like that. So, it's so interesting. And I can understand that, like, they're really selling, one thought at a time. They're really selling this idea that the game experience is all encompassing, because as you're watching them play in this game, I was feeling the same kind of panic for them to finally rescue that one person that they have failed to do over and over and over again.
Absolutely.
And, I was starting to sweat about it. I was like, man, I don't know how they're going to figure out how to do that, because it's obviously something important in this game. But they fail to do it at every single turn, which is so interesting. It was getting harder to not find their time in, I don't know how you want to describe the two worlds, but let's just call it real life, I guess, IRL. A lot of that was almost dull in comparison to what they're shooting and showing in terms of what's happening in the game, which I think they're doing on purpose, because I think they're really trying to work on selling this idea that living in this game world just feels so much better than it does living in real world, which I think is an interesting part of the show, an interesting layer of it anyway.
Do you like that part of it? Because some people, or some reviews, I should say, have kind of said, it takes you too far out of the element as far as watching. It takes you out of watching it.
Yeah, I think that you could easily sit down and you could easily watch each episode 2 or 3 times and see something different every time you watch it. Okay. I do think that I understand that complaint and where that could be coming from, but I don't know how warranted that is. I think that it's doing that on purpose. I think it wants the audience to be confused by that, because I think that that's what the characters are experiencing. And it's interesting. It's just an interesting story. It's an interesting thought experiment, if you want to put it that way. I'm excited to see where the show goes. And you almost can't wait to not have other shows to watch so you can sit down and watch those first couple episodes again.
I think it's going to be a massive hit, because it's not, how should I say this, come off right? From what we've gauged over the course of the years, it's not always like for instance, Dune Part 2, universally acclaimed.
Right.
And I'm hoping you still get a chance to see it. Dune Part 2, absolutely universally acclaimed, highest tier, doing good at the box office, but not great. It's not doing, it's not, I don't think it'll make $1 billion. You see a lot of times where movie that gets good rated, not great, but it's marketed in such a way and it has such hype attached to it because of a history, because of IP, whatever, it really connects with a larger audience for whatever reason. Maybe Dune Part 2 is too highbrow or intellectual for some, regarded as such, or maybe it's your dad's story, your mom's story, whatever, mm-hmm. in regards to that. So maybe that's why it will never achieve that superstar status that you and I probably think it deserves. With Three Body Problem, it seems to be more relatable to a larger audience because of the fact that it's just trying to just throw stuff out there. And if you don't get it the first time, it's asking you to watch it again, but it's making it in such an entertaining fashion that it's getting to be relatable to audiences out there. I really think this is going to be a massive hit for Netflix. Like we thought, we were the first ones to jump on, or we were one of the first to jump on here in the States on Squid Game, and how well that was and what that would do. We thought it would be a massive hit. And a week later, everybody on the planet was just blowing up about it.
Yeah.
And Netflix's Three Body Problem already is a well-known property. I really think this is going to be a massive hit for Netflix. And, you know, it's not because it's that our masterpiece of art. It's just because it's going to be something that has people continuously talking time in, time out.
Yeah, it definitely keeps you guessing. It really does. And, you know, just as I was starting to make my mind up about particular characters or, you know, what I thought their motivations might be, all of a sudden they throw something into an episode and you're like, oh, well, that was wrong. And you have to kind of readjust what your perception is of things. And I think that a show that challenges you like that is one that is going to have a lot of people talking. I think that people enjoy that feeling of aha, and then, you know, having their aha moment be taken away in the next episode. I think that it just keeps you guessing and it keeps you engaged.
It is Netflix's Three Body Problem. If you're watching it, if you're watching it now, and or if you want to go ahead and let us know your thoughts, when you do, popculturecosmos@yahoo.com. Well, my friend, it's been a great episode as always. You got a Vampires and Vitae coming up here on the weekend, I'm assuming. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. We do. Yeah. We are still in the thick of the wedding planning in the episode that's going to drop. But the game that we just played was Rose, you know, taking care of business. And I hope that people find it as interesting to listen to Rose and the things that she's remembering and thinking about as she's getting ready to embrace Philippa and getting ready to send her off to Benoit. And I don't know. I hope that it's compelling to listen to, because it's been really compelling to play at the table. So my hope is that that's going to transfer for the audience.
It is Vampires and Vitae. Please go ahead and check it out today on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. And I do want to go ahead on a little bit of a somber note to end this show, as I will talk in more detail with Josh on Monday, because there's a lot of things that we want to discuss on Monday in regards to this. But Buddy Gold, Canadian radio personality who owned and operated Croc Community Radio, passed away recently. We were just made aware of it. And basically, he was an outstanding friend of the show, was one of our absolutely biggest supporters of the Pop Culture Cosmos. And I was sad. I was really sad to hear the news. Melinda, as a fellow Canadian radio personality, any last thoughts on the way out? And again, I will be making a lot of thoughts again on the Monday show with Josh, because Josh and I and Buddy go back a long, long ways.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that is interesting about living a life on the airwaves, is that you leave a legacy with people that you didn't know, but who felt as though you were family to them. And when you lose that person, that personality that you have followed, that personality who's become your friend, it's felt by audiences and it's felt by people in the community. And, you know, your ripple, is felt, you know, in ways that you have never imagined. And I think that we are so fortunate to have had the opportunity to know him. And I think that we're very fortunate to have the opportunity to be able to go back and re-listen to some of those favorite moments, because I promise you that those will be put together and those will be put on the air and those will be shared through all of the communities that he has touched.
I was just looking back through some of the old messages I had, excluding the one and to letting him know about your arrival back in 2021. And he was excited to hear about a Canadian radio personality becoming a part of the show, and loved our show, both the Friday and Monday show. And definitely want to go into a little bit more on the Monday show with Josh. And all respects and condolences to his family on the passing of Buddy Gold. But truly wanted to make note of it before we headed out. And Melinda, I cannot thank you enough for sharing those kind words. And hopefully we will go ahead and continue to honor his name by producing good shows here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. So for Melinda Barkhouse Ross, it's Gerald Glassford. Thanks so much again for watching, listening. It is truly appreciated. It's another beautiful day right here in the PCC Multiverse. We thank you so much for listening. And here's hoping you have yourself a great